Going In Raw is now a CastBox original. CastBox is the fastest growing, highest rated podcast app on both iOS and Android, where you can find all your favorite podcasts. You can still listen to Going In Raw wherever you get your podcasts, but we hope you'll give CastBox a shot. We think it's the best. Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
Welcome back to Going In Raw Matt Chat. It's the show where we solicit our $20 a month and up Patreon supporters, subscribers, to send us video questions, giving us topics to choose from and debate or discuss. That's what the show is.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That was actually really well put, you know, a really well phrased way of putting
what
we do.
I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't paying attention to a word you were saying.
Trust me, it was really good.
Right now, I have one thing in my mind. Afternoon coffee.
Oh yeah, that's good too. I really like that. You should bleep out what I said. That'd be hilarious.
All right.
Because then people are like, what did he just say? Plus, we won't be demonetized.
Yeah.
Anyways,
that's
what's on?
Really the primary reason.
Coffee's on your mind?
Yeah, man.
Well, get wrestling on your mind right now because we've got stuff to talk about. We've got a lot. Wow, nice throw. We got a ton of questions to get through.
We have a lot.
Number one is from Vinny Elliott. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, friendos. Vinny Elliott here, supporting my main man, Adam Mahan. Get better, buddy. Anyway, my question is, what if Steve Austin never became Stone Cold and was still the Ringmaster? What if Dwayne Johnson never became The Rock and was still Rocky Maivia? Do you think the WWE would still be around? I'm not sure if Undertaker, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels could have defeated WCW. Just, I'm not sure about it. Would we be talking about WCW today? Would your show be called Going Nitro or Going in Thunder or something like that? Anyway, give me your thoughts, guys. Take care, too sweet, and a hearty handshake.
Thank you, Enforcer Vinny Elliott. No, that's Stevie Bradley.
Vinny Elliott's not the enforcer. He's the first friendoverse openweight champion.
Two hosses with beards. I get them confused often. I apologize.
All right.
Anyways.
All right.
I didn't want to tell you what I thought because I had to think about this a little bit.
All right. Oh, that's why you didn't tell me.
Yeah, because my initial instinct was to say you take the two biggest names away from the WWF during the Attitude Era. And I think WCW would have had a fighting chance. The problem is WCW still had Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, and Hogan. They were still dealing with all that. It was a terrible,
well, let me ask you
terrible
this.
Product by the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, it was. So it was a terrible product by the end. But here's the thing. If Austin and The Rock hadn't been there, let's assume, just for the premise of this argument, that WWE's ratings just kind of floundered. Because they didn't have those two guys to build the company around. And so Vince Russo wasn't this, you know, hotshot creative mind in WWF that WCW went out and tried to get.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, WCW really had no direct competition in the ratings. Let's say WCW was in the fives, Raw was doing like 2.5, 3.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps WCW might not have hired Vince Russo because it wouldn't have had a reason to do so.
Well, what was the hottest thing WCW had?
Well, it was the NWO, and then almost immediately they tanked it.
And after the NWO, it was Goldberg.
Yeah.
And look what happened to him.
Yeah,
and none of that was under Vince Russo's watch.
Yeah, I know.
So even without him...
Yeah, they had creative problems regardless of who was in charge.
You had a lot of creative problems. And in the end, it all came down to that one dude coming in with the AOL Time Warner merger saying, we don't want wrestling on TV anymore.
Yeah.
So I think WWF would have survived.
Oh, they would have survived for sure.
And I think in the end, they still would have won out. Would they have bought WCW? Maybe not.
Who knows if they would have been in a position to do it had they not
been
as strong in the ratings. But yeah, they would have survived.
It's not like they had to pay that much money for WCW for the tape library in the end. So they probably still would have.
I mean, WWF managed to survive in the early and mid-90s when the business was completely in the toilet.
It would have looked a lot different without Stone Cold and The Rock, obviously.
And who knows if they would have made such this, you know, without Stone Cold and The Rock there, if they had stayed the Ringmaster and Rocky Maivia. Mm-hmm. Would they have made the adjustment to the Attitude Era?
Right.
You know, would they have gone towards edgier content, or would they just kind of continue the path they were on, kind of over the top characters, kind of largely pretty bad wrestling?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
You still had Triple H there. Yeah, you still had Mankind. You still had Mick Foley.
And you also have to wonder how much, because you still had, you know, leading up to WrestleMania 14, you still had D-Generation X. So while I'm sure Stone Cold and to a lesser degree The Rock, because, okay, so McMahon delivered that silly speech, we're now less about blah, 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 in, God, I want to say it was like December of 97? When did he deliver that weird speech of his?
No, that sounds about right.
I want to say it was late 97.
It was after the Montreal Screwjob.
Right, yeah. And I think, I don't know, maybe the Montreal Screwjob was, I am kind of curious. It did seem like it was a perfect storm of, you know, DX working so well, seeing the NWO and what they were doing and why that was working so well. I think it was sort of, a combination of that, not necessarily, you know, Stone Cold and how successful he was that made them switch.
Yeah.
I think it was a variety of things.
Here, let's speculate. Say Stone Cold wasn't Stone Cold. He was mm-hmm. the ringmaster, so yeah. He never blew up like he did.
Yeah.
Who faces Shawn Michaels in the main event of WrestleMania 14? Undertaker?
That wouldn't surprise me, and that would have been pretty underwhelming. Because, I mean, we had seen Undertaker in the main event scene at that point. For
yeah,
like
he main evented the previous WrestleMania.
The previous one, yeah.
Or they push ahead with a... It seemed kind of early for Triple H to get that kind of prime spot.
Maybe Triple H. Maybe they would have convinced him to go with Triple H. Who is the Intercontinental? I mean, Ken Shamrock, maybe.
Main eventing WrestleMania.
Without a Stone Cold there. I mean, that's a pretty big vacuum right there. Any yeah. number of people could have been pushed to that spot, but there doesn't seem to be any one person. Triple A. I mean, if we take The Rock out of it as well.
Yeah.
What was because The Rock was in the Intercontinental.
Yeah, he had a match against Shamrock at that WrestleMania. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Shamrock was still pretty hot at the time.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And I'm not saying, dude, I'm not saying, I don't think, you know, I'm not sure that would be the right answer. I'd probably say The Undertaker would probably be Mark Mero. How about that? There isn't like one. It's kind of like when you take Hogan out of the equation. It's like, yeah, maybe Macho Man, but Hogan was so like back in the early 80s. That's we talked about that before.
Yeah.
If you take him out of the equation, like who really could have stepped up into that role?
Oh, it was Macho Man. That was
and,
it.
Yeah, it would have been Macho Man, and that's it. And with Stone Cold, it'd be The Rock.
But if you take both of them out of the equation,
it's a pretty big vacuum.
You have Undertaker and HBK, and not a whole lot. You have a lot of talented wrestlers, like Owen Hart was still mm-hmm. in WWF at the time, and he was yeah. a great wrestler and had the potential to be a main eventer.
Yeah.
He was just never pushed in that yeah. fashion.
Yeah, probably Undertaker, and who knows how much of a real impact that would have had. I mean, what were you going to do, bring in Mike Tyson? You bring in Mike Tyson, who's he going to be aligning with? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Again, maybe Shamrock, because they're both from legitimate sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's possible.
Maybe. Anyways, good question, though.
Yeah.
Mr. Dope, oh, this is my favorite. This might be my favorite Matt Chat video I've ever seen in my entire life. Let's take a look.
Hey, friendos, it's Mr. Dope's daughter here, and I think Amber Moon is going to win the Women's Money in the Bank. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? Thanks.
That was stinking adorable, Larson.
That was great.
Oh, my God. Everybody's sending your kids to do Matt Chat questions. It would only make this show better. Anyways, thank you, Maya.
Thank you, Maya.
Mr. Dope.
Thank you, Mr. Dope.
What a great idea. Is Ember Moon, or no, she wants to see Ember Moon go over
yes,
at Money
yes.
in the Bank.
Great idea.
It's the best idea.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this on People We Want to See Win Money in the Bank,
yeah.
the count out episode we did.
Yeah.
And Ember Moon was on the list of people we thought should win. Last year, this year, the ladder match is super face heavy.
Yes.
So a lot of good guys in it. On the women's side of things. And Ember Moon is there. They've been booking her like
super
a
strong.
Monster,
I know.
Beating Alexa Bliss a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Her in-ring skills are among the top in the women's division. And I think it'd be fantastic for Ember Moon. That's who kind of I'm rooting for right now.
Oh, me too. Me yeah. too. I've been a huge fan of Ember Moon since her debut in NXT.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm guessing the reason they're having her in the match is for Eclipse off the ladder.
Yeah,
because it's a great spot.
It'd be great.
But also, I think it'd be a great spot for her to pick up the win and carry that briefcase over all that established talent in that match.
Mm-hmm.
They can take her time. She could take her time, carry that briefcase for a while, really build up, or do a thing where she says, main event or at WrestleMania, I want to take on whoever is the Raw Women's Champion at the time.
If Carmella finds a way to get the sneaky win on Asuka, and then Ember Moon cashes in that night.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I want to see a that night cash in regardless of what happens.
Yeah.
I kind of like Becky Lynch to win also.
Yeah.
I think she might.
She needs to do something.
She kind of needs to do something.
She needs to do something. Yeah. I mean, I guess you can make a case for Charlotte. She can win and then go over to Raw and cash it in, you know, in advance on Ronda Rousey setting up that match. But mm-hmm. there's other ways around that.
Yeah.
She could win the Rumble, for example. But I don't know. I'm with you. I'm going to be rooting for Ember Moon.
Mm-hmm.
They've booked her incredibly well so far, and I hope they continue that. And I think picking up the Money in the Bank briefcase would be massive for her.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. Next up, we have a question from Baron the Cat Taxidermist. He's got apparently some sort of rebrand coming up. Let's see what he has to say.
Baron the Cat Taxidermist here with another question for you, friendos. I'm going to be doing a rebrand soon, so if you see my face, but you don't see that name, Hey, I'm still me. This question's in regards to WWE fandom. When I think of the product these days, I think that WWE fans almost clamor more for the backstage politics than they do the actual product. And what I want to know is that because the product is boring? Are we trying to find our excitement elsewhere? Or is that just the natural progression of a WWE fan in 2018? Are we just, because kayfabe is dead, are we just all clamoring to know who's got heat backstage, who, you know, pissed off Roman Reigns, who, you know, crapped in Randy Orton's cereal, who tickled Vince McMahon's fanny, those sorts of things? Are those just naturally now the more interesting things and is part of the progression as a fan? Let me know what you think. Thanks, friendos.
Thank you, Baron the Cat Taxidermist. Looking forward to his repackaging.
Yes.
Getting a new gimmick.
Yes.
Anyways, why are fans more into backstage drama, Larson? Number one, I don't think it's necessarily something that's new. Back in the day, 20 years ago, you and I, Big Jeff, living in the old apartment, what did we do every single day?
Every morning, we'd get up, get our breakfast, and go to Scoops.
Yes.
And see who is the latest person to join DX.
It was the most useless, never correct pile of dirt sheets, scoops.net or whatever it was. I swear they'd have maybe a 10% success rate. But it was always fascinating to hear the latest gossip and backstage rumors. You've said this many times, and I agree. Sometimes the backstage drama, the backstage politics, the process, the writing process is more interesting than what's happening in the ring. And it is. One of the reasons is because they are so closed off. When you, there's a new movie that you like, you can guarantee that once the DVD version comes out or the digital like extras, there's going to be a commentary track. The film industry, the TV industry, the music industry, they're all very transparent with how things are created. The wrestling industry is still in a phase where they like to protect a lot of that stuff for good reason. They want to keep the unpredictability up. So when you deny a fan base that, they're going to want it even more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I feel about it.
Well, I kind of agree with you, but I feel like things are a lot different now than they were 20 years ago when we were reading Scoops, because there's a lot more websites like Scoops. Sure, Dave Meltzer's been doing his newsletter for years and years and years and years.
Decades.
And he's always been kind of, you know, out in front of a lot of news stories as they break. And as we've said mm-hmm. many times, he is like the foremost wrestling historian around today. But, you know, back when Scoops was a thing, there was still pretty relatively small handful that I was aware of wrestling news sites around. Now, there's hundreds of them.
Well, yeah.
Maybe thousands.
Yeah.
And that's just on the World Wide Web. Put social media in there too.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to get scoops, to get breaking news, and then share it instantly to millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whatever, how it was relatively easy access back in 97, 98, 99 when we would read scoops. It's tenfold now.
Yeah.
In terms of getting immediate pro wrestling news, rumors, reports,
yeah,
so on and so forth. So it's how it was in 97 is a mere fraction of what it is today.
Well, the desire is still there.
The desire is still there. And as we've seen, you know, Meltzer's been doing the newsletter for what? How many years?
Like several hundred.
Yeah. So I think the desire has always been there. There's always been Pro Wrestling Illustrated. There's always been magazines that kind of deal in kayfabe, but also kind of not. Mm-hmm. So it's always been a part of pro wrestling. I just think access to backstage is so much more readily available and more immediate than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And it's easier for people to get access to this stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it's a reflection of the product in the ring. In terms of actual wrestling, it's never been better than it is now.
Yeah.
Creative, subject to debate, but the actual product in the ring is so good now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of that, people want to know what's going on behind the curtain. They want to learn more about the process of how all that happens. I don't necessarily think it speaks to the lack of quality of the televised product per se. I think it just speaks for the heightened interest of fans of that product.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think if you take the average episode of Raw or SmackDown in terms of the actual in-ring wrestling, it's never been better. In terms of storylines, that can obviously be debated. You can take a look at, you know, the best episodes of the Attitude Era and the best episodes today and match them up. And, I mean, you know, there's pros and cons to both.
Mm-hmm.
So, I honestly don't think that has much to do with it. I think that the desire has always been there. And like you say, the access to information is much more readily available now than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Next from the B-Man.
The B-Man.
Hey, B-Man.
Hey, B-Man.
Patrick Sparks. Let's see what Patrick Sparks has to say.
Hey, friendos. Pat here. SmackDown Tuesday. Dope as fuck. But, make this quick. How do you get more heat? Saying you're a huge fan of Roman Reigns and you love his booking and everything that's going on with him, or that you absolutely hate Daniel Bryan and he sucks? What do you guys think? Thanks, friendo. Bye.
Thank you, Patrick Sparks.
Thank you, B-Man.
Anyways.
Interesting question. This is the correct answer.
Okay.
If you say you're a huge Roman Reigns fan, you're going to get heat.
No,
yeah. Man, Here's the thing. Especially within the internet wrestling community, there's very few subject matters that bring about a more or less consensus amongst this community. One of them is that Roman Reigns is hot garbage.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly. We get plenty of people in our comments.
But we also get
plenty
of people that when Daniel Bryan is pushing, like, why are they pushing this guy? He's so small. So there's not even consensus amongst Daniel Bryan. I think the fervor of those who dislike Roman Reigns is second to none.
I legitimately disagree with you on this one.
All right.
I legitimately disagree. And you guys know my opinion on Roman Reigns. I think he hasn't been handled properly
at
all.
I'm not blaming necessarily Roman Reigns.
Nobody is more loved in the wrestling world, community, universe, whatever, than Daniel Bryan. To this day, when people say, oh man, I love Roman Reigns, I get it. I totally get it. I think he has positive qualities that people that people can do. But Dan, if anybody says, I can't stand it, what is wrong with you? That's my gut instinct. Just, why are you wrong about everything? If you say you hate Daniel Bryan.
Well, that's an extreme viewpoint.
I know, but it's the one that everybody shares when one guy
I don't think it's the case everybody shares
that.
Oh, man.
I'd like to know.
Daniel Bryan poster in my cubicle over there. I love Daniel Bryan. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, man.
And if someone says, I don't like Daniel Bryan, I'd say, why? I'd hear them out and say, okay. Assuming their position is like, okay, I just don't like that particular style of wrestling. I like gigantic hulking dudes in the ring fighting. I might disagree with their point of view, but I'd say, okay. But, you know, and people says, I love Roman Reigns. I would do the same thing. I'd say, okay, tell me why. Okay, I may agree or disagree, but I'd like to come to an understanding. Nonetheless.
Those are both incredibly boring scenarios you're talking about. That's great that you're very diplomatic. I'm not saying I would actually punch somebody in the face if they said, I hate Daniel Bryan or I love Roman Reigns. I'd be like, that's cool, teach their own. I'm just saying Daniel Bryan is loved in the wrestling community more than Roman Reigns is hated in the wrestling community. And when people say, I hate Daniel Bryan, it's so rare and it's so bizarre that I think a lot of heat come down on them. I really do.
I don't know.
Absolutely. Because at least the reaction to Roman Reigns when he comes out is still mixed.
It's predominantly booze.
A lot of booze, but it's still mixed.
Yeah,
nobody.
I still feel like it's 80% booze at this point.
People get euphoric. I was literally, when I was watching SmackDown yesterday and watching all those yes chants when he comes out and he's got that look on his face just soaking it all in, I was like, man, this dude, he owns the world right now of wrestling. He owns the freaking world of wrestling. Here's the thing about
Roman Reigns. This is how passionate the dislike is for Roman Reigns. They got this core of fans, 80% of the paying audience, more or less most of the time, managed to convince Vince McMahon not to put the belt on Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. And then again, yeah, at Greatest Royal Rumble.
That's just Vince being weird. We were even people who don't like Roman and don't like how he's been handled one and then put the damn belt on him.
I don't know if that's a universal statement.
I think
that's your position. That's not. I even think that's my position. I think they should have done something different with him a long time ago.
Well, I agree with that, but I'm just saying, approaching WrestleMania, I was the opinion. Look, let's just get this over with. Let's put the damn belt on him. No more hemming and hawing. Let's do that so we can move on to the next thing.
Let me ask you this. If Roman had won the belt at Mania this year, would people throw fruit and vegetables and tomatoes at him?
Well, this isn't freaking...
Or trash.
this isn't... What would it be the back in the medieval times when they would put people in the... What are they called? The stock?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't remember what it was called, though.
I forget what they were called.
It was like on vaudeville. They'd throw tomatoes at people if they bombed, right?
No, we're not historians.
No,
obviously.
No, we're not.
Obviously.
No, we're not.
Oh, man. No, I don't think. I don't know. I think, yeah, the place would have booed for sure.
Well, but that's an understatement.
But they started booing before the match was over. They started raining down boos in the first place.
Yeah, because
and
it was
nobody
a crap
cheered.
Match.
Nobody cheered when Brock won. It was like, oh, it wasn't like, oh, you saved us.
No, because no one likes Brock either.
Right. Exactly. So just move on. Brock is done. Have Roman just carry that damn title so we can move on. We're both in the same boat on that. Get out of here with that. Anyways, moving on. Oh, no. Thayer Thabata. The backwards talking Thayer Thabata. Let's see what he says.
Hey, guys. Who's better right now? 49-year-old Minoru Suzuki or 47-year-old Chris Jericho?
Thank you, Thayer Thabata.
Thank you, Thayer.
Look at him, man. It's very slow. When you talk to him in person, he backs up very slowly.
You know, that's you. Did not do that to me.
I think he probably did. You just didn't notice it. You don't pay attention like I do, man.
Not true.
Anyways, it's Y2J. What a career renaissance he's had.
Well, Y2J. Okay. Sorry, I thought you said
showing up in New Japan, stunning everybody, putting on a match of the year candidate against Kenny Omega, lighting up all the wrestling message boards and chat rooms. Man, so many people texting me in the morning. Not texting me. Not DMing me. Tweeting at me in the morning.
At you.
Look at this video. Matthew Ade always tweeting at me with the New Japan spoilers. It's Chris Jericho. Career renaissance. Always reinventing himself. Even better in New Japan. And then he shows up in WWE. And then back to New Japan. Nobody could do that. Not even Minoru Suzuki. Chris Jericho.
No, it's Minoru Suzuki, man. You're crazy. He's a legend.
You're crazy. And that's Chris Jericho.
Minoru Suzuki is like the most badass, nearly 50-year-old person on the entire planet.
Okay.
Like if I was... I wouldn't want to get into like a sort of fight with Minoru Suzuki. Heck no. He would destroy me.
So would Chris Jericho.
Well, maybe.
He beat up Brock Lesnar and Goldberg.
That was like 15 years ago.
Wasn't the Brock thing like a couple years ago?
No, it wasn't a couple years ago.
He confronted him.
Yeah, he confronted him. I admire his gumption there.
Oh, that's a badass right there.
No, he is a tough guy. I won't doubt that. But man, Minoru Suzuki, he scares me. I'm not scared of Chris Jericho.
It's all kayfabe.
No, Minoru Suzuki legit scares me.
Kayfabe.
You see him kick a young lion in the face.
It's all kayfabe. It's all hazing, man. He's a sweetheart in real life. Do you follow his Instagram?
Yeah. No, I follow him on Twitter though.
See, I do. I know the real Minoru Suzuki.
No, I do too. He seems like a really nice guy.
I've DM'd him.
That's not true. Kayfabe. He seems really scary.
I'm not saying he responded.
Super scary. But come on, like at the age of what, 49, Minoru Suzuki achieved his greatest success of his career, finally winning the got my belts mixed up. IWGP Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Talk about a career renaissance. Return to New Japan from Pro Wrestling Noah. Shocking the pro wrestling world by attacking Okada, challenging him for the heavyweight title. Yeah, he came up short, but it was an awesome match. Fantastic match. And here's the thing. He's 49 years old and still capable of putting on 5-star matches. So is Chris Jericho, but he's also 2 years younger.
He's also arranging a cruise.
Yeah,
that's maybe the most hardcore thing any wrestler's ever done, because cruises are terrifying.
They can be.
Yeah, I've never been on one. Don't want to go on.
You've never been on a cruise?
No.
I've been on a cruise before.
No.
I was inebriated pretty much the entire time.
That's great. That's cool. That's what I'd probably do. And I have no problem, but I just hear scary things. I don't know. I might go on the Jericho cruise. Might be fun.
What scary things?
Well, you've heard about the news reports about, you know, which one was it? I'm not going to say the name. There's been a couple, like, terrifying cruises that happened.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like that one boat that, like, ran into a, like a, something and
I'm not
sank.
Talking about the Titanic, man.
There was one in the Mediterranean that happened too.
Terrifying.
And like, you know, outbreaks of diseases will happen on boats.
Yeah, people get sick.
It happens sometimes, but it seems like a fairly rare occurrence.
It seems like things can go south very quickly on a
cruise.
Well,
you're in a confined space out in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, but like, how long are they ever? Like, how far away from land are they ever?
Depends
like,
where they're going.
Day?
No, sometimes more than that. If you're doing like a transatlantic cruise or something, you're going to be on the ocean for several days.
Oh, that's scary. I don't like that, man. Things go south immediately.
I just went to Mexico, so it was a day at sea.
See, that sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah, and you just drink the entire time. Yeah. And so in terms of the germs, whatever germs are floating around, you might get in your system. Booze will kill them.
Yeah, that's true, too.
So you don't have to worry about that.
Look, man, I'm not going to run down Minoru Suzuki. I'm just saying.
You can't. I'm not going to run down Chris Jericho. You know me. I'm a massive fan of Minoru Suzuki.
I know.
He's quickly shooting up my list of favorite wrestlers of all time.
Well, that's good.
And I don't really know his, I mean, I know his story, but I haven't like seen all of his work. I'm really familiar with Chris Jericho's work.
You should
work.
Read Suzuki's book. It's really good.
What's it called?
Best Wrestler.
Nice try.
It's called Best Wrestler.
Nice try. Nice try.
Called Gunman.
No, man. Minoru Suzuki. He's run his own faction for years.
Jericho. Brian Kelly has a question, because we're not going to agree on that one. Brian Kelly has a question. Let's see what he says.
Hey, Steven Larson. Brian Kelly here, and here's my Matt Chat question for this week. Laredo on Twitter recently posted a GIF of Kota Ibushi wrestling a blow-up doll, and I was wondering, there are strong opinions on both sides, and I was wondering, what's your guys' opinion on such things where there are guys doing slow-mo spots now in the ring, slow motion? Does it hurt? Does it help? Does it even matter? What do you guys think? Okay, talk to you next week. Peace.
Thank you, Brian Kelly.
Thank you, Brian Kelly. Here is a subject matter where we are in complete agreement.
Oh, man, I love comedy matches.
Heck yes. I was watching those Lariato GIFs they put up of Kota Ibushi fighting the blow-up doll, and it was wildly entertaining.
They're so much fun.
It's impressive that Kota Ibushi, like, he managed to have the doll pile drive him. Watching that match is actually beholding a very incredible feat of athleticism.
Yeah.
Because you were watching Kota Ibushi. Like, there's this one spot where the doll is giving him multiple Canadian destroyers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, my gosh, he's just repeatedly doing this.
Yeah.
All by himself, and it's incredible.
Joey Janela has been wrestling the Invisible Man for quite some time now, and they have put together quite a series of matches, some great storytelling, and it's just Joey Janela acting like he's fighting a guy. It's fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's hilarious. My favorite series of GIFs online are any of the DDT Pro ones. They're amazing. Matches in...
like an office building,
malls.
And some sort of nature preserve.
A lot of the time, it features revealed butts, which are always hilarious. Go-karts.
Mini bikes.
Like little pools of water, maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
They're hilarious. And I've looked into getting the DDT Pro
streaming service,
but it didn't seem all that user-friendly. I might try again, because I'm half a dullard, so I can't really... I navigate things very good. So there you go.
No, it's all, yeah. I mean,
I love comedy matches.
Yeah, heck yes.
Kenny Omega once said that his match against either the blow up doll or the 10-year-old girl was the match that he would show anybody who's trying to get into pro wrestling, because it's all there. It's like the ridiculousness of it, the drama of it, it's all there.
Yeah.
And it's a comedy match. It's great.
I mean, that's one of the great things about wrestling, pro wrestling, is that there's a wide variety of, compared to music, you know, there's a wide variety of genres in music, and there's a lot of good.
Yeah, it's weird.
And there's a lot of different kinds of wrestling, and there's a lot of good there.
Yeah.
Let's just enjoy what we enjoy, and if you don't enjoy it, just don't watch it.
Like, I'm not a huge fan of, like, current country music.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't crap on it.
No, same here.
I don't yell at anybody for listening to it. I don't go on message boards and talk crap about it.
Yeah.
I just don't listen to it.
Exactly.
And I listen to stuff that I like.
Exactly.
Like grunge.
Mm-hmm. I just made a grunge playlist. Prime Grunge is called.
I'm interested in that playlist.
I will share it with you.
Thank you, friend.
We can commiserate and determine whether the songs on said playlist are indeed prime grunge.
I'm looking forward to that productive discussion.
And maybe we should do a podcast about it, or at least start a message board post.
I think it'd be fantastic in a chat room.
Solicit ideas from other friendos about what they consider prime grunge.
What a great idea. But, and the same thing goes for wrestling. You know, there was that big dust up. Jim Cornette's always, and I like Jim Cornette. I think he's
got a very strict definition of pro wrestling.
And you know what? Hey, guess what? It's his opinion. He's been in the business for a very long time. If he doesn't want to like Kenny Omega, that's totally fine. That's his opinion. You don't have to share it. You don't have to tell everybody that you don't like his opinion. You can, because in this country we enjoy the freedom of speech. However, just let the man enjoy what he enjoys and let him talk the way he wants to talk. It's okay. If you enjoy Young Bucks matches, I do. I love them.
Yeah, they're great. They're great.
But if you don't, that's totally fine. You don't have to crap on them. Just don't watch them. Watch something else and enjoy that and be positive.
Yes.
Anyways, moving on.
Next, from The Nate Show. Let's see what The Nate Show has to say.
Hey, friendos. The Nate Show here again. I'm sitting here in a parking lot in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. And it got me to thinking, is there a city... because I know this city hosted a lot of Smoky Mountain Wrestling events back in the day. They do Raw here from time to time, a bunch of house shows and stuff. Other than Chicago, though, is there a city that you guys think of as like the premier wrestling city, or that even you'd go out of your way to make sure, if you know that Raw or SmackDown or even an Impact or whatever is going to be in that city, that you would go out of your way to make sure you watch, or that you get more excited for others? Not necessarily a debate topic, I guess, if you wanted to debate it. Like I said, other than Chicago or even Philadelphia, probably just exclude those two, because we know, for me, it was always sort of Toronto. I knew when Raw was going to be in Toronto, the crowd was going to be kind of like the post-WrestleMania crowd, where they were going to do some weird chants, and you know, they were going to cheer for the bad guy and boo the good guys. And that whole, I know that's the thing to do now anyway. But back before anyone else was doing, I know they were doing it back in the mid-2000s. So anyway, just want to know what you guys think. And as always, keep up the good work.
Thank you, The Nate Show.
Thank you, Nate Show. Great question.
Yeah, great question. Why don't you go first?
Sure.
Give some love.
I will. I've only managed to go to a handful, two in fact, shows in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, the experience was delightful.
Mm-hmm.
I will always remember one of my favorite wrestling experiences after NXT Brooklyn, walking through the corridors of the Barclay Center with everybody, singing Shinsuke Nakamura's theme song, because he had just won the NXT title for the very first time from Samoa Joe in a fantastic match. The crowd that whole night was awesome.
Yeah.
Super passionate about what was going on in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
The next night at SummerSlam, it was by and large a very good time, apart from everybody dumping on the Universal title nonstop.
Yeah.
I mean, if they had just voiced their displeasure initially, moved on from it, would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, passionate wrestling crowd there in New York City. Had a lot of fun in those two shows. Hopefully get experience not only some WWE shows, perhaps some independent wrestling shows in New York City. Maybe next year at WrestleMania. We'll see. But I will go with New York City.
You know what town doesn't get enough love?
I'd actually consider the city myself too.
In terms of being a fantastic wrestling town, city in the current day, Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's a good choice too.
How much is that scene blowing up? Absolutely blowing up. I'm right now on SoCalUncensored.com because I forget some of, I mean, obviously, first thing that comes to mind when you think LA wrestling,
it's PWG.
Is PWG. But PWG has also expanded. The other night, I watched the latest episode of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Which used to be, if I'm correct, it used to be an NWA affiliate, and it's no longer. But it's still its own thing. Some real fantastic talent there. And the show, you can catch it on the Fight TV app for free weekly. And the show has the feel of one of those old school in-studio TV wrestling shows where you got like the studio there because it's sort of a smaller venue. But some real fantastic wrestling comes out of there. Lucha Vavoom, I think, runs their shows there.
Yeah.
And I was looking at some of these other ones because I forget there's a couple
of
other names.
Was it PCW Ultra?
Yes.
That runs in I think like the South Bay area.
Yeah,
by Long Beach or something.
Yeah.
They run shows.
OCCW, isn't that the one that is that the one that Sandra's involved in?
Oh, maybe.
I forget.
But also like we went to the No Mercy there last year.
Yeah, no.
That was a good crowd.
Even when WWE goes there, it's like they're always memorable Raws and SmackDowns mm-hmm. and pay-per-views mm-hmm. when the WWE goes to LA now. Mm-hmm. Like it's a the crowd that goes, it's like a bar wrestling. They're there too.
Yeah.
Joey Ryan's.
Yeah.
It's such a savvy crowd mm-hmm. that shows up to these events now.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I would say LA is a hell of a town right now, especially for wrestling.
Yeah.
There's so much going on.
This is true.
It's really fantastic.
Next from Tapped House TV, Ian from Tapped House TV. Let's see what Ian has to say.
Hey, what's up, friendos? Ian from Tapped House TV here again, and I got bit by a dog at work this week, so I've been missing a lot of work. But it brings me to my question for you for Matt Chat this week. I want to know what your favorite shoot injury that was worked into a storyline is. Who had the best cast or crutch attack once they were recovered from their injury? And what kind of sneaky ways did they use it to hide it from the ref to gain an advantage in their match? Thanks, friendos.
Thank you, Ian.
Sorry to hear about fight with the dog.
Getting bit by a dog, but shout out for that awesome poster in the background. You chose wisely.
No.
Top notch.
No.
You know what?
I sent that dog. I hope your dog bite hurts. I'm joking. That was a very rude thing to say.
That is exceptionally rude.
Ian from Taptails knows I'm joking, though. Anyways.
You go first.
I go first. I'll never forget the time that Kevin Nash dropped the giant on his head.
Trying to powerbomb, yeah.
Like, dude, you shouldn't be trying to powerbomb.
He did, though. At one time, he successfully powerbombed them.
Yeah, but the first time he did, and it did not work.
Yeah, it didn't work at all.
Whatever the infamous one was, it did not work. It was like he legitimately dropped him on his head. Giant legitimately had some sort of neck injury. And they worked that into a storyline.
Yeah, didn't he walk around with a neck brace?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
That was the extent of WWE. Look, I like your answer way better because it's the best answer in all of wrestling. But yeah, I just remember us sitting there thinking, we watched that collectively 20 years ago. And I remember us sitting there watching and just being like, oh God, why did he just try to do that? Because it was so clumsy and awkward.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was so bad. Anyways, give us the right answer. Well,
yeah, first, we got to mention Cowboy Bob Orton.
Oh,
he had
yeah.
that cast on his arm for like 10 years.
Yeah. Eventually that healed and he just kept the cast on.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm going to go with Cody Rhodes. When he broke his nose, what?
Wait, one more runner-up. Shane Douglas having the ECW championship and a broken arm as well for a very long time.
Yes.
Ended up elevating Rob Van Dam's television
because
title.
That was actually defended.
Exactly.
Cody Rhodes, when he broke his nose and had to wear the mask, because they did such a masterful job of incorporating that into a storyline. Before that, he was handsome Cody Rhodes, whatever, and then he broke his nose. Still looked the same, mm-hmm. but was suddenly very ashamed of his looks and started handing out paper bags to the people in the crowd. Oh, yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Whatever happened to Cody Rhodes?
Well, I've heard he's on to he's been doing some good stuff lately.
I've heard he's been doing some good stuff.
Some really good stuff.
Out there in the
Some great
scene.
Stuff.
Yeah. Anyways, next up, we have a question from Zach S. Let's see what he has to say.
What's good, Stephen Lawson? Many friendos out there. It's your official IWGP Friendoverse Heavyweight Champ, Zach S. The question this week for Matcha is, what is the greatest NXT feud that we never got? Thanks, boys.
Thank you, Zach S.
Thank you, Zach S. I'll go first. We got a little bit of this feud, but we didn't get a real feud in NXT. I'm not going to choose some guy from, you know, like 2015 to face against somebody right now.
That's what I'm doing.
I selected a feud that probably could have happened. That
yeah.
really should have happened. So Kevin Owens, when he was the NXT champion.
Wait, you said we got a little bit of this? When did we
They had one match.
Oh, did they really?
On NXT TV, those ended in no contest. So when Samoa Joe debuted, it was at a takeover, and I think it was or shortly thereafter, and it was when Owens was beating up Sami Zayn. He came out to make the save against Sami Zayn. What followed was a match between Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe. Just one match, no DQ.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Joe was in NXT but is also wrestling elsewhere.
Okay.
And then by the time Joe was in NXT more regularly, Kevin Owens had dropped the belt to Finn Balor. They were setting things up for Balor and Joe to have their feud, which was great.
Yeah.
But we never really got a protracted, month-long Kevin Owens-Samoa Joe feud. And think how awesome that would have been. Two of the best talkers. Probably at the time, the two best talkers in NXT,
mm-hmm.
two of the best wrestlers in NXT.
Yeah.
Let those guys feud for half a year, an entire year, and that would have elevated the NXT brand.
Big time.
Huge back in 2015, early 2016. That would have been massive.
Kevin Owens was just in NXT for a very,
little bit.
Short period of
little
time.
Bit.
Very little bit. Yeah, the one that we never got. We might get on main roster, but not on NXT. Undisputed Era versus Finn Balor, Bullet Club guys. That's all I got, man. That's all I got.
Good 2 years.
There's any number of
other. 3 years separating the possibility of
this
feud
happening.
Any
number of other feuds that I could have gone with.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of Bullet Club. Bullet Club, Bullet Club.
Yeah.
The leader versus the guy who was probably going to be in the Cody Rhodes thing. Like mm-hmm. maybe trying to be leader.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of leader-ish of the American version of Bullet Club, mm-hmm. Ring of Honor. So, yeah, that would be mine. But we might still get that.
Yeah,
probably
I think
we will
get that. I think we will get that.
Probably. Next up. I'm embarrassed by that answer. Next up, JC Down Under.
Let's see what JC has to say.
Hey, friendos, it is JC Down Under here after 3 or 4 weeks of forgetting to send in a video question because I am useless. My question for you guys this week is, who's going to have more success on the main roster? Will it be Ricochet or will it be the Velveteen Dream? Obviously, Velveteen Dream, an interesting character. We all know how Vince and co. love to handle interesting characters. Or Ricochet could just end up on 205 Live. I mean, the roster is completely stacked at the moment, so it could go either way. I will let you guys decide on sides, and too sweet.
Thank you, JC from Down Under.
Thank you, JC. You go first.
Okay. Who's going to have more success on the main roster, Ricochet or Velveteen Dream? That's a tough one.
It is.
That's a tough one.
It's tough.
My gut says Ricochet, but it's only because I'm going to say Velveteen Dream.
All right.
And the reason why is because even though Ricochet, I think Ricochet might have the edge when it comes to fantastic matches. I think that's been proven.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Velveteen Dream's ceiling, I think, is that. Like, I think he can get there. I think totally can get there. Then you have to look at character. And you can't tell me that Velveteen Dream's character isn't vastly more interesting than Ricochet currently. Now, the massive caveat there is main roster's creative. I am not optimistic that they'll be able to handle Velveteen Dream. They can't even figure out Bayley properly. However, I think the possibilities are that Velveteen Dream can have a bigger main roster career than Ricochet. I think that the potential is there to have a higher ceiling. Will they do it? Probably not. But you know what? Got to stay positive. Got to have faith, Larson.
You should have faith and should stay positive. However, what you said about creative is 100% true, and that's why I'm picking Ricochet. As we see with Seth Rollins, Seth Rollins is really good on the mic, but what's really gotten him over, especially the last 2 or 3 months?
In-ring ability.
Putting on incredible match after incredible match.
Yeah.
And Ricochet can do that.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't say a word,
yep.
He will get himself over being one of the best wrestlers on the roster. And for that reason, I feel like, and we've seen his short time in NXT, his promo skills have already really, really improved. So just put him on the main roster, rely on his in-ring ability to get mm-hmm. him over, and then put him on the mic when necessary to enhance the storyline, but really focus on his in-ring ability. He'll get over. Huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Huge.
It's kind of like that draft where Greg Oden got taken number one.
Yeah.
And KD.
Yeah.
The more sure thing
yeah.
got taken number two. Well, Velveteen Dream is Greg Oden. All the upside in the world, chances are he's got, creatively speaking, old man knees. Why did Greg Oden look like he was 60 years old?
I have no idea.
When he was in the draft.
I don't know.
How old was he, like?
19 or 20.
19 or 20. Man, hopefully he's having a good life.
Yeah, I hope so.
He was a millionaire regardless,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. It's a guaranteed contract he signed.
Yep. So anyways, next up we have Joe Jensen. Let's see what Joe Jensen. Double J, ain't I great, Joe Jensen.
Hey, Steve Larson, friend of Universe, Double J, Joe Jensen here. I've noticed that wrestling is becoming more prevalent in pop culture, you know. Ric Flair being in the Migos music video, tons of rappers referencing wrestling moves, wrestlers, all that sort of thing. So my question is, do you think we're in the new renaissance of wrestling and pop culture, or will it never be as big as, say, the Attitude Era, the Rock and Wrestling Era? Let me know. Too sweet, hearty handshake. See you at StarCast.
Thank you, Double J.
Thank you, Double J. Ain't he great?
Are we entering, or are we in the midst of a new renaissance period of wrestling? We get a lot more mainstream references to wrestling. It seems like a lot more mainstream outlets are covering wrestling.
Man, when Sports Illustrated is putting together these fantastic little mini video docs on Cody Rhodes, on the Young Bucks, All In, it kind of feels like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what we like last year was maybe the best year of actual wrestling we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that, you know, with the U.S. invasion of New Japan, with the indie scene blowing up around the world, with WWE's global localization, it kind of feels that way. And plus, like you said, with all the mainstream coverage that wrestling's getting, you know, the ratings might not be where they were 20 years ago, but the money, that doesn't matter to the money people, because the mm-hmm. money's definitely mm-hmm. there for the WWE. Mm-hmm. We've seen that this past week.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it kind of feels like a interesting time.
In reference to Joe Jensen, one of his examples he gave was, you know, in hip-hop artist music, we see a lot more references to wrestling and wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
I know Run the Jewels have made several references. He mentions that that Migos song with Ric mm-hmm. Flair. And, you know, I kind of wonder if there's a lot of people who grew up watching wrestling, especially during the Attitude Era and after.
Yeah.
Who are now out there creating stuff and referencing the wrestling they watched when they were younger.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. And then also, as far as the mainstream coverage of wrestling, I kind of wonder if that's somewhat associated with the rise in popularity of MMA, fight sports in general. You know, when UFC first started, it was kind of an underground thing.
Oh, yeah.
And now
John McCain called it human cockfighting. He did.
No, I know. I forgot about that.
Because he sees, what is it, Royce Gracie, little tiny Royce Gracie taking on like 400-pound men.
Well, he'd win, though.
Yeah, and he'd win, yeah.
I know.
But,
Royce
yeah.
Gracie was great.
Remember? Hey, do you remember when we were kids or when we were like coming up and there was always like, man, do you hear about, I remember hearing about UFC. Its reputation so preceded
itself,
I know, that you'd hear stories of like, yeah, this guy had his face ripped
yeah,
off
from
in the
elbows.
Ring.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, from
yeah.
elbows. Yeah.
I've never seen footage of that.
I've never seen anybody have his face
like,
ripped
literally
off.
Literally, the most upsetting thing I've ever seen in from the early days of UFC is Tank Abbott knocked some guy out and he had a seizure because he got concussed and so his arms were stiff while he was
right,
laying on
yeah.
the ground.
Yeah, but his face was intact.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody's face get ripped off in early UFC.
Right, exactly.
But I know, I remember hearing those stories too.
Yeah, you hear people dying and stuff and it's like, I mean, I know people have been messed up in the ring, and I'm sure that, you know, throughout the history of MMA somewhere and in boxing, people have died in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, I don't recall there being a UFC pay-per-view where somebody actually died in the ring. I don't think that happened.
Yeah, I don't think that's happened either.
But
I'm not – we're not historians, as you mentioned earlier.
According to my, you know, to my teenage years, that happened multiple times during multiple pay-per-views.
But since MMA has grown in popularity and become, you know, has been legalized in all states and is – pretty well accepted. ESPN just paid $1.5 billion to air mm-hmm. UFC on their family of networks. I think that's helped pro wrestling likewise become more mainstream. Granted, it's not a competitive sport in the same fashion MMA is, but it's under the label of fight sports.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's choreographed to an extent. They're telling stories. It's not the exact same as MMA, but we've seen a lot of crossover between the two sports. I think they're similar enough that the popularity of one could help the popularity of another.
When you were a kid, when I was a kid, the stigma of pro wrestling was it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if maybe in addition to people growing up, having been kids during the Attitude Era, also a lot of the people who are creators now who are maybe 10 years younger than us never grew up with that because in the mid-90s they dropped, for all intents and purposes, any pretense
that what they were presenting was real. Yes.
Exactly. You know, they opened up and, you know, no, we're it's
entertainment.
It's fake. It's entertainment. And because, granted, you know, there are still people out there who, you know, act like they're, you know, who poo-poo it because, oh, it's fake stuff. It's fake stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
By and large, it's like, yeah, it's fake, but so are movies and TV. Like, so is a
yeah,
lot
no,
of
what's
stuff.
The huge deal?
There's no deal there.
I know.
It's just, it's entertainment. And I think that's kind of become the narrative because now for the past 25 years, that's been the thing is like, oh, it's not, we know it's fake. That's not a big deal. It's besides the point.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that plays into it too.
Yeah. Could be. Next, we got a question from Broken Steve. Let's see what Broken Steve has to say.
Who has more upside as a solo competitor, Curtis Axel or Bo Dallas?
Thank you, Broken Steve.
Thank you, Broken Steve. I kind of feel like it's Bo Dallas. That's just sort of my gut. I kind of feel like they're a bit on the same level, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, though. I mean, I don't think one is, there's no Shawn Michaels and no Marty Jannetty, but it's kind of with Bo Dallas, I know they did the Bo Leave thing, which I never felt had a high ceiling. They tried to do the straight up serious wrestler guy thing with Curtis Axel.
That didn't really work either.
A couple times and it didn't work.
But what did get over for him was the Axelmania stuff.
Yeah, but again, how high of a ceiling?
Well, that in and of itself, not very. But if he can somehow parlay that into some sort of character that's a transition from that, that's a little more grounded.
Yeah.
That could have been something.
I think it'd be tough for both of them, especially at this point after being the Miztourage for so long. I hate to say that their ceiling is Heath Slater and Rhino. But in the short term, I think that's a decent ceiling to have. And then trying to transition into back into solo wrestlers in a serious way that has a real ceiling to it. That's not a joke. Not a lot of people have been able to pull that one off.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of comedy wrestlers who have been able to break the comedy thing.
Yeah, that's hard. Especially once
it's not easy.
WWE Creative has it in their mind that you're a comedy wrestler.
Yeah.
It's so hard to break free of that.
I mean, the New Day incorporated, you know, obviously comedic elements, and they were, I guess, kind of a comedy. I mean, look, they throw pancakes at people, you know, that's a comedy act. But they've been very, very successful as a faction, as a team doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of like...
Well, I think they're a tag team who are funny as opposed to being booked like a comedy act.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I think there's a difference there.
Yeah. I think that is kind of one thing that The Miz during SmackDown pointed out about Big E. I don't think... He said it in character. He says, Big E, the only thing holding you back from being a main eventer is that you don't take yourself seriously. I wonder if that would be, because you and I both kind of agree that Big E would be the guy. He could be a world champion.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, sort of as Big E New Day guy, that would be tough for me to swallow. I wonder what he'd have to do to like.
See, I don't have. I don't think I have that issue, because we've seen him at moments flip that switch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where he's not joking around at all. He's serious.
Yeah.
We've seen it enough times that I would find it completely believable.
Yeah.
So I remember when Miz said that, and I understand what the reaction was supposed to be, but I didn't necessarily buy it.
Yeah. I mean, within the context of their universe, I kind of did. I was like, okay, that's a fair knock on that character, you know, throwing around pancakes and stuff, you know.
Like I said, when he needs to flip the switch and get intense,
yeah,
he does it.
Yeah. Getting back to the question of Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. In the end, I don't know. I my gut says sort of Bo Dallas, because I feel like his singles run in the first place was, and not by much, but more successful than Curtis Axel, because he found, I mean, say what you will about Bo Dallas, he had that character that he's been fairly consistent with, and although it didn't net him a title or anything, it had some traction to it.
No, I understand that. I will say this about Curtis Axel is he has held titles before. He was a tag champion. He was Intercontinental champion. And yeah, like the character work wasn't, there really wasn't much given
that
to him.
That was one of those things where they put the title, especially
yeah, I know.
The
and that, you know, they made him a Paul Heyman guy. But we saw after that when he was actually free to show some character, that he can do that. Mm-hmm. It seems like, at least at a couple points, they were really high on Curtis Axel.
Yeah.
And who's to say that can't happen again, especially now that he's shown some depth to his character, his ability to show some personality.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I really want big things for both these guys.
Yeah.
I really do. Minnesota Joe, one of my favorites. He's up next. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, friendos. Minnesota Joe here with another Matt Chat question. And my question this week... is based off of the Sami Zayn segment that happened, and how offensive that probably was to a lot of people. I mean, it didn't offend me, because it's kind of hard to offend me. I don't get easily offended. But I could see how people could get offended. So my question is, what are some segments or moments in WWE that have offended you like, personally, I'd say for me, it's like, whenever they do intergender matches, but they do it wrong. For example, like, Vince McMahon versus Stephanie McMahon and I Quit match, like, that was just uncomfortable. So, yeah. Let's see what you guys come up with. Thanks, friendos. Too sweet and a hearty handshake.
Thank you, Minnesota Joe.
Thank you, Minnesota Joe. I really like that Golden Lover shirt.
Yeah, it's a good shirt.
It looks really sharp.
Yeah. I guess you go first.
Oh, here. Okay. So we were discussing this. I think we both said, okay, there's a couple obvious examples.
Are you talking about like Katie Vick?
That kind of stuff. The more obvious stuff that you're like, what the hell were they thinking doing
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so I'm kind of, here's my thing. I'm kind of like with Minnesota Joe. I don't get offended, like, I don't get personally offended easily. It's funny, a lot of people, and maybe I didn't make my point correctly in the Raw episode about the Sami Zayn stuff. It didn't actually personally offend me.
You could see how other people could be offended by it.
I totally understood how other people could.
Yes, exactly.
And I was surprised, my point was, I was surprised that WWE would go there when it was fairly obvious that that would offend quite a few people.
Mm-hmm.
I am really, it takes a lot to actually offend me. WWE has done some very questionable stuff that could be construed as super easily, you know, that people could be offended by. Triple H not losing to, you know, Triple H busting out the racism stuff with Booker T, you know, it's probably prime in there, you know, Triple H, you know, having sex with a dead person. Isn't that what that was supposed to be?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was supposed to be.
Okay, yeah.
While wearing a cane mask, right?
Yeah, while wearing a cane mask. That's just shock value. It's stupid. I don't find it offensive. What I actually found offensive, but the only thing I really find offensive is when wrestlers do things that go overboard with their physical well-being. It's wrestling. I totally get that being in pain, hurting yourself, that's just part and parcel. That's just what comes with it, you know? For me, one of the only times when I was like, oh my God, in WWE anyways, was when The Rock delivered, what was it, 12 whatever chair shots?
Probably at least 11 too many.
Something like that. Headshots.
Unprotected headshots.
Unprotected headshots to a handcuffed Mankind. Even watching it back then, not understanding that, like, you know, brain damage was a thing, you know, that you'd have to worry about, concussions and stuff. Even watching it then, I was like, this is way too much. Like, mm-hmm.
It was uncomfortable to watch.
It was uncomfortable to watch, yeah. So, I don't know. That's probably my thing.
Yeah.
When it's just physical stuff, it's like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
I don't need that for my entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when they're like the stuff they would do a lot more often, especially in the Attitude Era, when it came to objectifying women.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you know, even when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, I was like, okay, this is too much.
Yeah.
This is too much.
I think when it got bad for me, I think, and it's hard to say, well, I'm offended by that, but it definitely made me want to change a channel, is even like a little bit post Attitude Era. When Vince would continue to do
the lecherous stuff.
Wait, lecherous Vince.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like actually grossed me out.
Yeah.
That was stuff that I was like, oh, and it was just, honestly, I guess that's being offended when you're grossed out,
mm-hmm.
that's being offended,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I would watch it and, you know, him start to like put his, you could see his tongue.
Oh yeah.
With like Candace Michelle or whoever he was kissing. It was like, that's just gross to watch.
Yeah.
That's just nasty to watch. I don't like watching that.
No.
So I guess that did offend me. And then I'm trying to think, what, there's one other thing I was thinking of. There was that. Oh, and then the Kiss My Ass Club.
Mm.
It was because it was kind of gross.
Mm-hmm.
Like his asshole's right next to his butt cheek, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where assholes are.
Mm-hmm.
That's just
that's where they are?
Last I checked, that's where mine is.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that.
It's like around the butt cheek corner.
Oh, okay.
That was kind of gross to me. I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Just because of the dynamic of it. So, yeah, those things. Next up, AO Worm. He's got, I love this question.
This is a great question.
Makes you want to go for a jog. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, guys, what's going on? AO Worm here. So, Steven Larson, you guys get to pick two wrestlers to be your personal trainers until you get your ultimate body that you guys want. So for me, I would choose John Cena and Seth Rollins as my trainers. John Cena for strength and conditioning, and then for cardio, I would pick Seth Rollins. So who would you guys pick for your trainers? All right, guys, take it easy.
Thank you, AO Worm.
Thank you, AO Worm.
Oh, man, this is easy. Seth Rollins. He called it. It'd be Seth Rollins. Are you kidding me? The CrossFit Jesus, that's what they call him? That's what I'd want to do. Here's the thing. I have a short attention span.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people see me playing on my phone during the podcast. I try not to do that. I just have a short attention span. It'd be Seth Rollins because CrossFit, you're doing something new, like a lot.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm not mistaken, it's like, oh, you do this, and then you do that, and then you do this, and then you do that.
Well, and also it's different on a regular basis. Right, not exactly. Just within the course not of a workout, course, workout, but workout to workout. Every day, yes.
Yeah. So, like, it would be Seth Rollins. Like, look at him. He looks amazing. And
he's got cardio for days.
Yeah, and I'd love – yeah, exactly.
See, I agree with Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm. Or Daniel Bryan.
Yes, Daniel Bryan would be a good choice, too.
Otis Dozovich.
Okay. Stakes and weights.
I'm kind of already on his plan right now.
Stakes and weights.
Eating. Oh, man. This is like maybe my favorite Matt Chatter.
Yeah.
Next to Maya. Maya's my new number one. Maya's in the top.
Yes.
Then is TNA for life. Let's see what he has to say.
What is going on, friendos? I am TNA for life here for another Matt Chat question. I want to know, Steven Larson, if Batista was to come back to WWE and feud with Roman Reigns, who would be more over with the fans, Batista or Roman Reigns? Too sweet? Hearty handshake. Peace out.
Thank you, TNA for life. Steve, let me take this for a second.
Okay.
The correct answer is Roman Reigns versus anybody. Yeah. Anybody would be more over.
Anybody. And they've even lost the ability to use a guy like Sheamus or Jinder Mahal to get Roman Reigns over. It's anybody. So anybody. No. And Batista is so loved right now.
Yeah.
He is so loved. He's like, you know, the funniest joke from Infinity War is Drax's, the Y Gamora thing. Come on. It's, dude, no way. It's Batista.
It's Batista.
People love him.
Mm-hmm.
I love him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's great. They could time travel Lex Luger from 1997.
Yeah.
And have him face Roman Reigns, and he would be massively over.
Luger get the biggest pop of his entire career.
So there is, I'm sorry, there is no argument to be made.
I don't know. Is there anybody in wrestling now that could get Reigns over?
Jeff Jarrett circa 1995 or maybe 1999.
I don't know, man.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if there's anybody.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I honestly don't know. I don't think there's anybody. It's this experiment is over.
Yeah, and it's an abject failure.
Is Vince just trying to play this on like legendary difficulty mode?
Maybe.
Like whatever the toughest real life difficulty mode
maybe.
Is. Maybe he's just trying to.
It's like, just his grind. He's just grinding away at it.
I need a new challenge.
And thinks at some point, they're just going to give up.
Mm-hmm.
They can't boo him forever.
Need a new challenge. Make it even harder for me to get him over.
I know. Next from Uncle Dan.
What's up, my dudes? This is Uncle Dan, long time patron under various other names. First time Matt Chat question asker, here we go. What would you guys think? You have mentioned Big E being in the Money in the Bank match, cashing in successfully, going on to be world champion. That would be rad. What would you guys think to having him drop out of the New Day after that happens and then, excuse me, possibly being replaced by someone like No Way Jose, who they clearly don't have any kind of plan for whatsoever, but I think would fit in with Woods and Kofi quite well. Love to hear what you think about this. Thanks, guys. I don't do two sweets either. Larson, I'm with you on that, so high fives to both of you. Thanks.
Thank you, Uncle Dan.
Thank you, Uncle Dan.
In a word, No Way Jose. No, the New Day's chemistry runs so deep, so thick, it's so powerful.
You take one member out of the New Day.
Falls apart.
Yep.
Yep.
No. You can't replace just one member of the New Day with anybody else.
It'd be weird, man. It'd be like when Vance and Coy tried to replace Bo and Luke Duke.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that.
Can't do it.
Just let contract negotiations play out, go on hiatus, run reruns of That's Incredible. And you're good.
There you go.
Bo and Luke will come back.
Yeah.
You can't replace Bo and Luke.
Nope.
You cannot replace anybody in the New Day.
Nope.
Especially with No Way Jose, who just kind of just dances. He loves his conga line.
Yeah.
He does that.
Yeah.
He loves that.
That's true.
There was a great picture somebody put online of Adam Rose and his Rosebuds. And below that, a picture of Noe Jose and his conga line people. And they're sort of similarly posed. And the question is, how many future stars can you see in Noe Jose's conga line? And it's funny because I had seen that picture of Adam Rose and his Rosebuds before. And I remember seeing Simon Gotch and then Braun Strowman and Becky Lynch. And this time when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, that guy's Elias. Because the last time I had seen it, I hadn't seen Elias. I didn't know him.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that he was that guy right there.
That's crazy.
It was a trip. Yeah, it was a total trip. So, we have got a couple text questions here as well from the real Slow Wolf. Who was the better Jeff Jarrett? Ain't I great? WWF, JWEF, FWEF, JERRETT that got inducted into the Hall of Fame? Or the WCW slap nuts, short haired Double J with the yellow sunglasses? Pick a side and discuss.
OG Jeff Jarrett, that's the answer. Yeah. That's one that got inducted into the Hall of Fame. That's one Vince likes, so therefore we must all like it because he likes Roman Reigns, therefore we must all like Roman Reigns.
Wow.
That's Vince logic right there. That's the Jeff Jarrett that won all those titles in his dad's promotion.
Okay.
He won a majority of his Intercontinental or some of his Intercontinental titles with that gimmick.
Long-ass episode.
I know. We're not done yet, Steve. So if Jeff Jarrett, OG Jeff Jarrett, asked me, ain't I great?
What do you say?
Sure.
Sure you are. Man, come on. The answer is Slap Nuts himself. Who else would politic? Who else would align himself with Vince Russo? Completely, like, if the NWO wasn't already dead, adding Jeff Jarrett to the newly dubbed...
You're just enhancing my answer with all this.
Oh, crap. I'm supposed to be saying how good he was.
Yeah.
He was WCW World Champion. He was in a movie. I think he was in... Wasn't he in Ready to Rumble?
I don't remember.
Probably.
He was the only champion because he was buddies with Vince Russo.
Hey, the only reason Roman Reigns is going to beat Brock Lesnar is because he's buddies with Vince McMahon.
Oh,
that's what life is. It's networking. It's
connections. Yes, I know.
He was great at networking.
That's why he won those titles in his dad's promotion. Because he was friends with his dad.
he was also part of the greatest angle in wrestling history, the real finger poke of doom. Not the fake one, but the one where he just dropped down for Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan...
I don't know if that's a storyline, man.
You know what's funny? You know what's great?
That might have been a shoot.
You know what's amazing about that? Is that Hulk Hogan still went for the pin. He couldn't resist going for the pin.
I know.
He didn't just... You know, keep his dignity, keep his principles, and say, I'm not doing this. This is a bunch of garbage. He actually went down and pinned the guy.
I mean, that's the win.
It's another win for Hulk Hogan.
Another win for Hulk Hogan.
Oh, that's fantastic.
The thing about Double J is that it's not like he was pushed to be a main eventer at any time in WWE. He was a mid-card guy. So if you want to walk out of the room and get a snack and go to the bathroom, cool. You're not missing
much.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Slap Nuts Jeff Jarrett,
top of the card,
was the focal point of many a Monday Night Nitro.
It was the A story.
And so you had to sit through all that crap.
Oh, man. This is the worst.
So, Double J.
You know who the best Jeff Jarrett is? The best Jeff Jarrett
is in Spring Breakers. He's actually really good in that movie.
Is the guy who started TNA, who got people jobs,
yeah,
who helped people find work after they burned out of WWE. Up-and-comers like AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Chris Daniels.
Yes. That's the best Jeff Jarrett.
That's the best Jeff Jarrett.
Second best Jeff Jarrett. He's great in Spring Breakers.
All right, good enough.
This short role, small role.
Hey, one last text
question. One last text question from Mo Clow or Mo Clo? Master of the Low Blow. Must be Clo.
I think it's Clo
because it rhymes.
Rhyme.
Mo Clo, Master of the Low Blow. He asks, in today's business climate, assuming gaining relative success in WWE is the end goal, is it better to start a career in wrestling through WWE's developmental program and developmental program and sticking through until main or going through the indie circuits or anywhere outside WWE, making a name for him herself and getting signed by WWE towards a main roster debut, regardless if they went to NXT first? Thanks, friendos.
So here's my thing. If you can get signed into WWE's developmental from an early age, I think odds-wise, that probably helps you the best because they automatically see something in you. You don't have to relearn their system. I mean, granted, I understand that they're going out and they're just collecting independent names, you know, willy-nilly. But I think if you can get accepted before you've even stepped foot in a WWE ring, if you go through their tryouts and they accept you, I think I'd be hard pressed to say no, just go out on the independent circuit and try to make your way there. If it were me and I was 20 years younger and fit and like I wanted to become a wrestler, you know, if you want to do that, go on the independent route, because that's, you know, it seems like that's the place where you pick up. All my favorite guys started on the independent circuit. They all went through the indies. However,
are you answering both perspectives?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess nothing for me to say.
Well, if you have anything to add, please feel free to
come. I thought you were arguing one perspective. I was letting you talk.
I'm just saying if they accept you, take it.
No, I understand that.
So I'm saying
I understand that.
Go ahead.
It depends on if your goal is getting to WWE or, like, say, main eventing WrestleMania. Because there's no better way, I think, for a wrestler to build their brand worldwide than to going around the world and wrestling. And that generally means these days, you're going to do it immediately, you got to start in the indies. We've seen it countless times, especially recently with WWE signing seemingly everybody. A lot of people they signed, as you just mentioned, all your favorite wrestlers made their name in the indies.
Mm-hmm.
We have Adam Cole, Samoa Joe, Daniel Bryan, somewhat, lesser extent, just because he wrestled New Japan, that's not an independent company, Finn Balor.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestlers who wrestled around the world, built their brand, and then when they get to the early to mid-30s, they make the jump to WWE, and they show up either NXT or on the main roster with a built-in audience ready to support them. We saw with AJ, we've heard, you know, like when AJ signed, you know, like his first WrestleMania, he lost to Chris Jericho. And not that long ago, I read this something where they didn't really have a whole lot of plans for AJ. And then the fans embraced him so much,
mm-hmm.
partially, I think, because he already had an established brand. Also, he puts on the best matches, that they shot him to the top of the card. And we see Samoa Joe showed up on Raw after being in NXT for about a year. Instantly inserted into one of the primary stories. Kevin Owens comes to NXT, instantly wins the title pretty much, is in NXT for a short spell of time, goes to the main roster very quickly up in the main event part of the card.
Okay, so hold on a second. You said it depends on if your goal is to be in WWE or main event WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Which one would be which?
Well, I mean, if you just want to get to WWE, if your primary goal is to make it to WWE, I feel like, then you go through the developmental system because then you're in WWE. Already.
Who main event at WrestleMania this year?
Roman Reigns.
And?
Wait, Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns.
My point is that if
who main event last year?
My point is, generally speaking, that if you want to show up and make immediate splash on your main roster debut, you're probably in better shape having built a worldwide audience going through the independent ranks or going in New Japan, Ring of Honor, something like
that. Look, I don't disagree. You and I are on the same page on this. But if you look at for every AJ Styles.
Yeah.
How many other independent guys are there that for every name that's signed to WWE, there's like thousands out there.
Oh, I know. Every trial they have at the Promo Center, there's probably several dozen people who show up and like three are signed.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I mean, even going that route is not a guarantee you're going to get signed.
The odds are long regardless.
Yeah, regardless of the path you want to take.
If you're, let's say you're 21 years old, just say you're 21, 22 years old, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're about to kick off, you have your first couple bookings. You've gone through wrestling school, right? You've got your first couple independent bookings at Virgil Flynn III Productions,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you get a call, hey, you've been invited because we know of your football pedigree.
Yeah.
You've been invited to take part
in a tryout. Yeah. Well, yeah, you take the tryout.
You take the tryout and they say, hey, we like you, we'd like to sign you. Or you can go down the route of your independent.
It would depend on that individual's aspirations are.
Get to the WWE. Seth Rollins is your aspiration. Seth Rollins, that's your aspiration. That's a tough choice to make.
It is a tough choice. Imagine the wealth of knowledge that he learned wrestling in the indies.
Yes, absolutely.
And exposing himself to a wide array of styles that he might not have done had he signed to WWE when he was 22 years old.
It's hard to not put your foot in the door, though.
Oh, I know.
And you're so young. At least start building relationships.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, go through developmental. If you wash out, you wash out. I mean, go to the indies.
Probably the perfect scenario would be someone like Adam Cole, who had a tryout with WWE early on. Mm-hmm. And what Triple H said, say to him?
You need to look more grizzled.
Yeah, you need to look, you know, you look tougher. And so he wrestled for another 5 years,
mm-hmm.
Got some more experience in the ring, and that experience presented itself in his presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, what, 27? He's still a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's already got a ton of experience. He's probably exposed himself to a wider variety of styles wrestling around the world than he had if he had signed 5 years ago.
The real answer is go to New Japan's dojo.
Yes.
Can't go wrong with that.
Can't go wrong being Young Lion.
No. Anyways, that's it for Matt Chat. Thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. And once again, patreon.com/StephenLarson. $20 you guys can get on this show as well. It's a blast. It's a lot of fun.
Time to get coffee. Let's go.
Okay. Yeah, we're out of here. Thanks for watching. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.